I mean, what has physics ever done for us?
Well, AI, Graham.
Hmm?
AI.
What about it?
Well, physics. Where would AI be if we didn't have physics, Graham?
Well, I imagine it'd be floating around.
Do you think
they're
going to make it with wizards? We were all sat around a campfire with a giant pot.
I just think...
chucking frogs' legs and moss into it, and then AI appeared.
The AI fixed the digital zoo. Smart machines, what will they do? Flies to Mars or bake a bad cake? World domination, a silly mistake.
Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 81 of the AI Fix, your weekly dive headfirst into the bizarre and sometimes mind-boggling world of artificial intelligence. My name's Graham Cluley.
And I'm Mark Stockley.
Now, Mark, what are you talking about this week?
I'll be talking about AI agent telepathy.
Ooh. And I'll be dropping in on the classroom to learn how AI is changing education.
But first, the news.
This is a service announcement. Trains have been delayed due to AI.
Are we living through the next great leap in reasoning?
Progress declared as Chinese six-armed robot found to be capable of strangling people three times more quickly.
Expert personas don't improve factual accuracy.
So, seismology news. Earlier this month, there was a 3.3 magnitude earthquake in northwest England. Very exciting when we have a tremor. And it was felt across Lancashire and the Southern Lake District. And one of the consequences is that trains were halted due to major damage done to a bridge in Lancaster.
Well, it makes a difference from, you know, a crisp packet being on the line or something, doesn't it?
Well, I say this earthquake caused major damage to a bridge in Lancaster.
Yeah.
The reality was that trains were halted due to Network Rail spotting an image on social media of what purported to be major damage done to the Carlisle Bridge in Lancaster. But rather like the Manila Fire Brigade, who, as we remember, race out at the mere hint on Instagram that a truck might be on fire,
yeah.
Network Rail had been fooled by a hoaxer who had used AI to create the image of this busted bridge.
Hang on. So there was an earthquake.
Yes.
And Network Rail were like, yeah, it'll be fine. And then someone sent them an AI-generated image of some damage to a bridge, and they were like, oh, maybe we should go and check the bridge. I feel like the person with the AI image has done us a public service here. I feel like Network Rail should already have formed an opinion about the bridge and the rest of the system before people started just randomly emailing them pictures, don't you?
I suppose so, but surely that could have meant that they'd spent all this time and effort and sent their bridge experts to a particular bridge rather than somewhere which might have had more genuine need to be examined. Somewhere where maybe there was more evidence than just an AI image. And by the way, a BBC reporter was able to very quickly determine that it was a fake picture because he uploaded the image to an AI system and said, was this AI generated? And the AI said, yes, one of ours, actually.
I'm not sure that works either.
Look, here's the thing, Mark. 32 services, including passenger and freight trains, they were delayed because of the hoax. And because of the length of the West Coast mainline, some trains were delayed as far north as Scotland. British Transport Police, meanwhile, they say that they've been made aware of the situation, but they're not going to investigate into it.
When you say they were made aware, did somebody send them a picture of something? Somebody sent them a picture of some people from Network Rail staring at a bridge and scratching their heads.
I think they should.
Is any of this real, Graham?
Well, I think that's why the police should be investigating all of it. They should be investigating the image. They should be investigating the bridge. They should be investigating the social network. They should be investigating Network Rail. They should be investigating everything to see if any of these things exist. And if there is some kind of prankster at the bottom of all this, they should be given a proper good talking to.
So you're okay with the Manila Fire Brigade ignoring pictures of fires?
Fake fires?
You're fine with that particular branch of the emergency services completely ignoring potential evidence of a fire?
Just ring the person who lives next to the bridge and say, look out the window, is it damaged or not? That's what they should have done.
So, Graham, let's return to your favourite AI benchmark, Arc AGI 2.
Oh, goodness. Hate it.
You remember that one. So, listeners, we've done a couple of episodes on this. This is a reasoning benchmark that looks a little bit like a series of Tetris puzzles, which Graham is particularly fond of.
No, I'm not.
Because humans can do it too.
No, they turns out they can't. Because I tried. I didn't understand the rules properly.
So the Arc AGI benchmarks are designed to assess general reasoning. So most benchmarks are you really good at maths, or are you really good at these PhD level problems? And those are often tests of skill and memory. But Arc AGI and Arc AGI 2 are tests of reasoning ability.
Right.
So we spoke about Arc AGI in the middle of last year. It'd been around for about 5 years, and it was really grinding progress from most of the frontier models. And then all of a sudden, in the space of about 6 months, the frontier models got really, really good. They went from hopeless to brilliant almost overnight. And then the people behind Arc AGI came up with Arc AGI 2. And what happened last year is happening again now. So the pass mark for Arc AGI 2 is also 85%. But on this one, humans tend to get about 66%. Podcast hosts a little lower than that. And pretty much any major model that you've ever heard of was down in the low single digits until very recently. And then right. Google released Gemini 3 and a version of Gemini 3 called Gemini 3 DeepThink, and that posted 45%.
Impressive.
And Anthropic's new model Claude Opus 4.5, which came out a little later, got 38%. But really importantly, it cost Gemini 3 DeepThink about $77 for each problem on the benchmark. But Claude was doing them for about $2.40, which is really impressive stuff.
Well, yeah, but not...
Well, what does it take, Graham? What does it take to impress you?
I just think if Google Gemini 3 DeepThink was that clever, it wouldn't spend $77 for each problem. It would just pass it over to Claude and keep $75 to itself, right? These companies are just burning through money to play these pratty little tests, trying to, oh, look how clever I am. Look how clever I am. Not that I've got a chip on my shoulder or anything like that, because I did the test and failed. I just find it extraordinary, the amount of money that's been spent on this. I mean, I hope this is going to be put to some practical use at some point in the future, at least in a way which...
At some point. I mean, that's AI in a nutshell, isn't it? At some point, this is going to turn a profit and be useful.
Yes, in a way which doesn't sort of impact me in my life, preferably.
You do know you're on a podcast about AI.
Yes.
Whatever happens in AI is going to have some sort of impact on your life. Anyway, the reason I'm talking about this is because Gemini 3 DeepThink has now been surpassed.
Oh.
We have a new top score. So a six-person startup called Poetic, which you'll love because it's got a Q on the end.
God's sake.
Has created what it calls a refinement loop reasoning system, which is basically a thing that you can bolt onto Gemini 3 Pro. And when you do that, it pushes the performance past 50% to 54% on the Arc AGI 2 benchmark. And it slashes the costs to $30 per problem. Now, last year, we had this sudden improvement in reasoning on Arc AGI. And I thought that was more revealing than any other benchmark that I looked at, because I felt that change. Like, we all lived through that sudden improvement in reasoning.
Yeah.
And if Arc AGI 2 says there is a sudden improvement in reasoning ability again, then that to me says that something is shifting in the ecosystem. Improvement is not linear, it goes in jumps, and it feels like we're living through another jump.
Now, Chinese appliance giant Midea, they've taken a break from making dishwashers and kettles and air conditioning units in order to unveil the Miro U.
Is it another humanoid robot doing kung fu?
Well, it could be. Do you remember the Sinbad movies in the 60s and 70s?
I saw them as reruns, yes.
With the stop-motion animation by Ray Harryhausen.
Oh, yes.
And so you might have had one of those statues with six arms sort of having a great big sword fight with people and things like that. And they were great things, weren't they? Well, the Miro U is a factory robot which could possibly do kung fu, but it has the advantage of having six arms. It's like the long-lost cousin of Doctor Strange.
Is it a human? I mean, is it like a spider or is it a humanoid with six arms?
It's a human with six arms.
What?
I mean, take a look at it, Mark. Take a look.
Oh, it's waving.
It's waving a lot.
It's doing a team synchronized swimming routine by itself.
So the Miro U is a wheeled nightmare, which will apparently, according to the company, boost line changeover efficiency by 30%. That's corporate speak for it's going to do your job more efficiently without any requests for a Christmas
it's
party.
It's going to do your job and your two closest friends' jobs more efficiently, Graham.
It rolls around on wheels, apparently. They haven't bothered with legs because arms are where it's at and stairs are for the unemployed, apparently.
Yeah, that's rubbish, isn't it? We're basically, Medea, really good at arms, terrible at legs.
It's an arms company.
So they were like, let's make that a design decision. We're either going to give it arms for legs or we're going to give it wheels and lots of arms. Play to your strengths.
What I find interesting is this is Medea's third attempt at a humanoid robot, which means somewhere in China there are earlier prototypes with different numbers of arms. I don't know. And I wonder, what is this just a reaction to other robots folding laundry really, really slowly?
Well, you think it's still slow, but at least it can do three towels at the
exactly.
same time.
Yes.
I do not understand what's happening inside robotics companies. They all seem lost to me. There's good reason for building a humanoid robot, okay? The world was built for humans, and so every interface is designed with a human in mind. So it makes sense that you would build a robot that matches the existing interfaces to the entire world.
Mm.
But if you have decided to break from the humanoid form factor, why would you then have a torso with six arms and a head? Like, if you're going to break free from that restriction, why not fully break free and create something really novel and useful? Why would you just make something really scary?
I actually think the human form may be flawed, Mark, because I find it a disadvantage only having two arms. I think I'd like to have more than two arms because sometimes I bring my wife tea in bed, you know, bring up the tray.
Yeah.
And so I've got all the teapot, I've got the sugar, I've got the milk, I've got all the, you know, all the business. And I might want to scratch my nose. Or I might want to open a door or turn on the light switch or something like that while my hands are full. Wouldn't it be terrific to have at least two more arms? Because I don't want to be imbalanced. So I need to have an even number of arms.
Yeah, so you want one on each side, not one on one side and three on the other.
Exactly, yes.
That's what they should do as a demo. Never mind doing kung fu. They should just have it carrying a tray and scratching its nose and opening a door.
It actually hasn't got any noses at all, this robot. Again, unless the nose is placed somewhere else on the robot that we haven't seen so far.
Now, I don't know if you've noticed, but there are a lot of tricks and recipes in AI. And I don't mean crockpot recipes, although obviously those exist. I mean like received wisdom and homebrew solutions.
Mm-hmm.
Use this prompting framework.
Yes.
Be rude to your AI. Be polite to your AI.
Yes.
And one of the most widely recommended techniques, even from AI companies, is telling your AI to act like an expert. So
All right. You
go to ChatGPT, you've got a legal problem, you say, as an expert lawyer, tell me what you think of this contract. Or as a doctor, tell me what these unsightly red bumps are, etc.
As a president of the United States, tell me about injecting bleach into my bloodstream.
Anyway, the Wharton School, there have been none of that. They tested six models, including GPT-4o and Gemini, on graduate-level science and engineering questions, and they found that telling an AI you are a physics expert delivered minimal benefits.
Well, is there any benefit to being a physics expert anyway, a real-life human one? What has physics ever done for us?
Well, AI, Graham.
Hmm?
AI.
What about it?
Well, physics. Where would AI be if we didn't have physics, Graham?
Well, I imagine it'd be floating around.
Do you think
they're
going to make it with wizards? We were all sat around a campfire with a giant pot.
I just think
chucking frogs' legs and moss into it, and then AI appeared.
I just think the laws of physics exist. I don't think we need any experts in physics. It's because it just, you know, just happens. I mean, it's not like they actually do anything.
You think they're just noticing stuff?
Yeah, they're just saying, oh, yeah, I knew it would do that because of physics. It's like, oh, thanks, helpful.
Anyway. You can't wait for Christmas, can you? Anyway, So they tested all these models, and basically telling your AI to act like an expert doesn't make it more of an expert. However, it does work the other way around. So thicky personas will get you worse answers.
Right.
I don't know if this is useful, but if you tell your AI to act like a layperson or a toddler, it will give you worse answers.
Oh. Have you tried it with podcast co-host?
That's a really good idea, actually. As a podcast co-host, can you come up with an optimistic take on this six-armed robot? Regular listeners will know that my original co-host, Graham, stepped down from the show recently. Thankfully, I found some brilliant guests to fill Graham's shoes on the mic, but Graham also did a whole host of important work behind the scenes too, and to fill that void, I've turned, fittingly, to AI. Claude Code is designed to work as a software engineer, but the truth is, it's absolutely brilliant at making computers do all kinds of useful things. So, by using its MCP connectors, Claude Code can help me sort through the AI Fix mailbox, write Google Docs I share with guests, and make changes to the AI Fix website. And it doesn't stop there. I've actually got a whole team of specialized Claude Code subagents working behind the scenes on the AI Fix now, and my virtual staff is growing bigger every week. Anthropic says that Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. It's the collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you. Whether you're debugging code at midnight or strategizing your next business move, Claude extends your thinking to tackle the problems that matter. Ready to tackle bigger problems? Get started with Claude today at claude.ai/AIfix. That's claude.ai/AIfix. And check out Claude Pro, which includes access to all of the features mentioned in today's episode. claude.ai/AIfix.
Now, Mark, I don't know about you, but I've got some lovely, fond memories of my school days.
Yeah, no, none.
You don't have any? The smell of the canteen?
No.
The squeak of chalk on a blackboard?
No.
You know, there were teachers who genuinely believed in me. They changed my life. They encouraged me. I still have fond memories of them.
Oh.
And my grandchildren, I was thinking about this, my grandchildren, they're going to have fond memories too. I'm sure of that. The gentle whir of servo motors, the soft glow of LED eyes. That robot who used to spank six kids at once with six arms. And I've been taking a look at what's happening in schools and how AI is bulldozing itself into the classroom. So let's start in England, in the county of Lancashire, to the Valley Leadership Academy in Backup. Yes, there really is a town called Backup.
And I believe they recently experienced a 3.3 earthquake.
I imagine that Backup is twinned with the city of Offsite in Ohio and General Protection Faults in Idaho.
Volume Shadow Copy in Germany.
And this school in Backup has, ironically enough, a lack of backups, a lack of a particular type of backup, a lack of backup teachers in Backup.
They just never thought of it, Graham. There was no reminder.
Apparently, since September, math students in years 9, 10 and 11 are being taught by a teacher who lives 300 miles away in Devon. Now, for people who don't know the geography of the UK,
they can probably imagine what 300 miles is.
Well, yes, but it's different, isn't it? 300 miles in Canada is very different from 300 miles in the UK.
Yeah.
300 miles in the UK, from Devon to the South Pennines, it's quite a journey.
Yeah, especially the bit through Devon, which is basically on a footpath.
It's a bit like travelling from the Shire to Mordor. I'm not saying which is which. And what's happening is that these pupils who are presumably studying for their maths GCSEs, an important exam, they've been given a virtual teacher, beamed in across the internet via Teams or whatever it is, from Devon, teaching them maths. Now, I know what you're thinking. Both you and I, Mark, we were fathers during the pandemic and our children were being schooled remotely. And suddenly we woke up one morning to find we weren't podcast hosts. We were suddenly teachers.
Yeah. Is there anyone within the nearest 300 miles who would like to teach maths to my children instead of me? Is that where you're going with this?
It was horrendous. And you're probably thinking, these kids in this classroom, there could be like 30 kids or something in there. They're going to mess around. because there isn't a teacher there to wallop them or give them a hard stare.
Well, that's why they need the six-armed robot.
But don't fear, because apparently there will be another teacher who is going to sit in the room with the kids while they watch the screen with the real maths teacher on it.
I've had a brilliant idea.
Right.
What if the person in the room also knew maths?
That would be helpful, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, first of all, if they're keeping an eye on 30 kids, it would help if they could count. So they would know if half the kids have gone out the window.
Yeah. There are 2x plus 14 children in this classroom.
So this other teacher apparently sits in the classroom too. And this is the quote. They say,
yeah,
they're there to facilitate learning and engagement. In other words, they're just making sure the kids aren't on their phones, that no one's turned the TV screen around to face the wall.
They're a corporate security guard.
They are, effectively.
They're a 95-year-old man in a uniform.
Now, not everyone is happy with the kids being taught remotely this way.
Yeah.
Emily Cook, for instance, she teaches maths at the school. She's the union rep, and she's on the picket line, and she's on strike.
Well, maybe if she got in the classroom, she could teach those children some maths.
Exactly.
I'm confused. So I don't mean to just completely disrupt your story, but there is a maths teacher in the building.
Yes.
And there is another human body in the room who's not that maths teacher. And then there is another maths teacher on the end of Teams 300 miles away.
So she told the BBC, "I will not stand back and allow the teaching profession to be downgraded and diminished into just imparting knowledge over a Teams call. However, she will stand back on a picket line and not sit in the classroom and teach the kids bloody maths." She said, "Will your virtual teacher be there to dance with you at prom, hug your mum during results day, or high-five you in the corridor because you know you won the match last night?" And there's a first thing I've got a problem with. Who wants to dance with their maths teacher at the school prom? That's like the worst thing imaginable.
That does sound like the sort of thing you end up talking to a judge about.
It does. What's your mum doing going around hugging the maths teacher, for goodness sake? The school says this is a win-win, particularly for the maths teachers who are getting hugs all of a sudden. They say it's a response to the national shortage of specialist maths teachers. And I understand there's a teacher shortage. I understand that schools are maybe struggling to recruit maths teachers. That's a real problem.
Yeah.
Needs real solutions. But Emily Cook, she's not having any of it.
Maths teacher Emily Cook.
Maths teacher Emily Cook. She says, no. She says, "I thought we were trying to get teenagers off screens, not give them to them for 5 hours a week in their maths lesson." Again, Emily Cook, maybe you could teach the kids maths in the absence of a maths teacher rather than just talking to the BBC about it. But I think she's got a point.
Yeah.
Because teaching isn't just about standing at the front and explaining quadratic equations. It's about noticing when a kid's struggling. It's about being there, physically there, when they need someone to talk to.
Yep. Or like my design and technology teacher, it's about writing your resignation letter every lunchtime.
Was that straight after the lesson with you?
Yeah, it was. I think it was how he used to blow off steam, that he would go into his office and write his resignation letter every day over lunch.
As maths teacher Emily Cook put it, she said, "Is the teaching profession just about imparting knowledge and red pen feedback, or is it a much bigger profession? Is it about the pastoral side? That relationship between teacher and student." And again, I accept pastoral care thing is important, but let me say again, who wants to dance with their maths teacher at the prom night? Where's the pastoral care there?
Yeah, I do feel like these things are not equally important. I don't want to undersell the importance of the imparting knowledge part of that set of skills.
Yes.
But that does seem
more important than having a dance.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Unless the lesson is dance and drama.
So how is this going to get fixed? And that's where it gets really interesting, because maybe AI is the answer. A question we often ask on this podcast, could AI be the answer? To which my answer is inevitably, no, it bloody well isn't. So while teachers are striking over a human teacher on a video call, other schools in the UK are going considerably further. So Great Schools Trust, which runs schools in Liverpool, Warrington and Bolton in the UK, they're not just putting teachers on screens, they're creating deepfake teachers.
So, what?
Yeah.
I have a lot of thoughts about AI and education. And this feels a bit like the six-armed robot. Like somehow the way we're going to use AI in education is going to be just to replicate a teacher as closely as possible, rather than look at the problem afresh and go, how can AI fix the problem of teaching children things they need to know before they leave home at the age of 18 years old? It's how can we make AI look and act as much like a human teacher as possible?
They're going to be deep faking the tobacco stains, the elbow patches.
the resignation letters.
The proper replica of a teacher. The plan is this. The AI will apparently mark students' assessments and mock exams. Yep. Then the AI generates a personalised feedback video for each child featuring a deep fake of their actual teacher.
Oh.
So little Tommy hands in his maths homework, the AI marks it, identifies where he went wrong, and then produces a video of what appears to be Mr. Henderson explaining it all back to them. Except Mr. Henderson never recorded the video. The real Mr. Henderson is at home on his sofa watching Great British Bake Off.
On the picket line.
And the CEO of the Educational Trust, he says, this is about giving every child personalised tuition. No, it's not.
I take back everything I said just now. I actually really like this.
Oh, for goodness sake.
I think this is great. I think teachers are already using AI to mark work. And they should. I feel like AI is already at the level where it can probably mark students' homework really effectively and probably very fairly, and it doesn't get tired. And the one thing that teachers complain about is all the work they have to do outside of school hours doing things like marking. And if there's another thing that can do the marking that is as fair and as good as the teacher, that leaves the teacher to go to the prom.
But you need the teacher, hopefully, to understand where the children are struggling and indeed where the AI is struggling and where the AI is making mistakes too, Mark. Because newsflash, Mark, AI sometimes goofs up.
But so do teachers. I mean, you just get the kids to pass a test.
For this educational trust to say that this is about giving every child personalised tuition. No, it isn't. That isn't personalised tuition. The CEO of the trust says it is completely voluntary for teachers. And he insists what we're not trying to do is replace teachers. Well, it seems to me that they are replacing teachers.
I've heard that song before.
Yes, just like they replace DJs on radio stations. This is the replacement of teachers. They're saying, teacher, you won't have to do that anymore. We're going to do that instead. So how's this going to help kids have better relationships with their teachers and mentors?
Yeah.
Which surely a little bit of human-to-human relationship would actually be a good thing for young kids who are spending more and more time on their screens. One parent who works for the trust, they said it would be really quite special for her daughter to get feedback from an AI deepfake of her teacher. Presumably, she just sends her daughter TikToks rather than speaks to her over the breakfast table. So,
does her daughter even need to go to school?
I'll be honest with you. Was she really ready to be a parent?
Sorry? I'm going to leave it for you to decide whether or not that stays in the podcast.
A separate survey has found that only 12% of parents think AI should be used in classrooms at all, which means that you are in the minority, Mark. So there is a bit of a divide here. But if you think deepfake teachers sounds like science fiction, let me take you to China. Because if you want to see the future, go to China. They've gone one step further. They've built an actual robot teacher.
Of course, it's already in
classrooms. Its name is Zhao An. It is 1.4 meters tall, which is about 4'7". It's described as the world's first full-size bionic education robot.
And I imagine in order to sell this thing, they have a video of it doing kung fu.
Here's how one media report set the scene. They said, in a brightly lit classroom in Hefei, Eastern China, I don't know why the emphasis is on brightly lit, a 1.4 meter tall humanoid robot.
You want to see that robot coming.
Takes a step forward.
It's not hiding in a cupboard.
Weighing 35 kilograms and dressed like a teacher, it faces a group of curious students. Within minutes, it explains scientific concepts, answers questions, and is even smiling back at the children. Now, the bit which confuses me is I've seen this robot.
Yeah.
And when it says dressed like a teacher.
Yeah.
Well, you go and have a look at it, Mark, and tell me if you think it's dressed like a teacher.
Is it dressed for the prom? Oh. In what way is it dressed? Is it dressed in the sense that there aren't exposed servos?
It's not dressed at all, is it?
No.
It's completely naked. So I don't know what that's all about. So this isn't just an iPad on wheels. We've seen those before in the classroom.
Hang on a minute. Maybe it's just something we don't know about the Chinese education system. Maybe this is dressed like a teacher.
Well, the company behind it are called Anywit Robotics. They've previously built a bionic robotic panda with realistic fur, which apparently works as a tour guide at the Giant Panda Museum.
Just reminds me of the old Monty Python sketch about building a castle on a swamp. We built a robot panda and that was rubbish. Then we built a robot dormouse and that was...
Anyway, in China, they say students are instantly interested as this naked 4'7" robot comes in, starts talking to them about quadratic equations. In Britain, we're arguing about whether it's acceptable to have maths teachers dial in from Devon. We've got all kinds of bonkers here. And we've got these deep fake virtual teachers as well giving feedback. Emily Cook back in Lancashire, I think she put it best. She said, the fear is if we do not stop this, if it goes unchallenged, it will spread. And in 20 years' time, what is education going to look like? And are we okay with that? And apparently, Mark, you're fine with this. Well, that's great. But I am not.
Have you used AI to do any teaching with yourself?
Yes.
That's the most interesting thing about that answer was the pause, Graham. Clearly, there are pastoral things and kids need to learn social interaction and all sorts of things like that. But the current teaching setup that we have dates back to the industrial era. There's a reason that we have giant uniform classes where all the kids are the same age and, you know, they have it. This is basically how you teach kids whose parents are working in factories. And I think we're long overdue an update to that. So is it just a kid sat in front of a computer with an AI and no human interaction? I'm sure it's not. But equally, I'm quite sure it's not the factory kid version of education that we have now, which is 150 years old.
Well, yeah, you are right. In the very near future, that the kids aren't going to have parents working in factories or probably working at all. Who knows? Happy Christmas, everybody.
Yeah.
Happy Christmas.
So, Graham, as a cultured and civilized man, you're no stranger to a soiree.
No.
A bijou dinner party.
Mm-hmm.
So I want you to picture yourself at one now. So
yes.
Think fine food, fine wine, fine company.
I can imagine the pineapple and cheese on sticks. Maybe I've brought my flute with me. This sophisticated soiree.
Yeah. But so far, it's all chit-chat.
Okay.
And you're not really into that, are you?
Well, I just think I work on a deeper level than you. That's the thing, Mark.
Well, luckily for you, the topic of conversation turns to the Pertwee era of Doctor Who.
Ah.
And your brain lights up at last, you think.
1970 to 1974. Yes, carry on.
See how excited you are. Something you can really get your teeth into and maybe even show off a bit, God forbid.
Yes.
So finally, you've got things to say. So you lean over to the person next to you and you prepare to deliver something subtle and intelligent. You're going to make your mark on this dinner party with a nuanced insight about John Pertwee's Venusian Aikido.
Oh, very good.
The ethics of waking up the Silurians.
Yeah, well, it was more how the Brigadier dealt with the Silurians in episode 7 of that story. But anyway, yes, you know, it's...
But unlike now, where you're droning on...
Could we do a Doctor Who podcast rather than AI? Would that be all right?
Instead of speaking, you lean over to the person next to you and you just beam your entire brain state into their skull directly. No words, no sentences, just an instantaneous blast of thought goo arcing over the prawn cocktail into somebody else's cortex.
Okay, that sounds interesting.
Yeah. Is it polite?
Oh, I think you'd need permission, yes. I don't think can just do that without permission.
But is it efficient, Graham? Is it efficient? Yes, it is. You could wrap up all the small talk, all the posturing and intelligent conversation, and even the gossip in the car on the way home before the first glass of wine is even full.
Mm.
You see, It turns out that the thing that humans are really proud of, the thing that sets us apart from the beasts, the thing we brag to all the animals about, speech and language, is a bit of a drag. And even if we all get Elon Musk's brain implants and we start talking to each other with our minds, we're still going to be using language and we're still going to be exchanging words. But the AIs, Graham, they aren't.
Right.
Now, as we've discussed before, the future of AI isn't humans having one-to-one relationships with ChatGPT or Gemini. It's going to be populations of AI agents interacting with each other to solve problems. We've already seen small groups of agents making remarkable things happen in science and medicine and computer hacking.
Mm.
But this is just the very beginning. The future is going to be full of cooperating AI agents. And when you think about that, you probably imagine something quite noisy. You probably imagine they're all going to be talking to each other like we do.
Yes.
But a new research paper dares to suggest that language is actually a bottleneck.
Yeah.
The thing that we are so proud of in ourselves, and the thing that we actually built large language models to be good at, let's not forget, is actually a slow, clunky Victorian telegraph system compared to what models can actually do.
Yes.
So the authors of this paper aren't suggesting a more efficient language or a new protocol. They're saying that you can build a system where nobody talks at all. The agents just exchange thoughts directly, like a group of telepathic monks on a silent retreat in the Cotswolds. In an existing multi-agent setup, you have a bunch of models performing different roles. So maybe you've got a planner, perhaps you've got some experts or a critic or a fixer or an emotional support being or something.
Right.
And the models talk to each other in text because that's what language models do. They model language and they make text. But the authors wondered, why are we forcing AIs to speak out loud in words when they think in vectors?
Hmm.
It's like asking two mathematicians to communicate a proof via interpretive dance. You can do it, and it might even be fun, but it's not what you would call the optimal substrate.
I think that's how I'd like physicists to communicate with the rest of it. If there's any point in physicists, I think I'd like that. Yeah, in a form of a dance or,
yeah,
maybe some pottery.
So, instead of making AI models do interpretive dance or have conversations, the paper introduces something called latent thoughts. And those latent thoughts are just a series of vectors. So just think about them as a giant grid of numbers. And normally, that latent thought gets turned into a token, into a bit of text or a word like straw or berry. And then that token becomes the next bit of input, which shapes the next latent thought, which gets turned into the next token,
yeah,
and so on. But in this system, called latent mass, the AI doesn't turn the latent thought into a token. It just takes that raw thought, that grid of numbers, and it uses that as the next input. So it's not saying straw, it's saying the idea of straw.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no translation, there's no tokens, there's no words, there's no sentences, and there's no conversion into and out of meaning. And that makes these latent thoughts vastly more expressive than text. They are up to 400 times more expressive. It's like putting an entire 3-year university course onto a post-it note without losing any meaning. And that, Graham, is just step one. That's just the chain of thought in one agent. That is the conversation it's having with itself as it works up an answer. Remember, this is about cooperation between agents. So
yes,
the next question for the researchers is, how does one agent give its thoughts to another agent without converting them into words or Morse code or some other representation?
And presumably you want them to be speaking the same language to understand each other's geometry and how these thoughts reside in one agent, how that makes sure that it's understood properly in the other agent. So there's a common language.
Exactly. But again, this is not about a common protocol. This is something like a cross between the transporter from Star Trek and a brain transplant.
Yeah.
So in technical terms, what the models are doing is they are exchanging their entire KV cache, which is their working memory of an entire conversation up to this point. And it's called latent working memory transfer. and it's the equivalent of taking an entire memory out of one model's head and then bolting it directly into another's, over and over and over again. So entire thoughts get transferred back and forth instantly and silently. And because it doesn't spend any time creating or interpreting tokens, and it can put an entire university course on a post-it note, it's fast and it's accurate. So all of the models used in the research were open source Qwen models.
Right.
So some of them were harnessed into this latent mass system, which is exchanging thoughts. Some of them were used on their own, just the regular vanilla Qwen models. And some of them were harnessed into regular multi-agent systems where they talk to each other. And so everything had the same basic underpinnings. Everything was based on the same set of models. It was just that the methods of internal and external communication were different. And guess what?
What?
No surprise, telepathy wins. Latent mass was 4 times faster and solved up to 15% more problems correctly and was vastly more succinct than the other models working on their own or together as part of multi-agent systems. And I think that's not bad for a first stab. And what really interests me about this is that this, I think, is a rare glimpse into the future. Because we have a tendency to look at things now, like we did with the teachers. You know, the future of teaching is a computer that looks like a teacher. But the future probably isn't going to look like now, but with blinking lights. The future is going to be something quite different. So we built LLMs that could understand and talk to us. Mm. And that makes them something, I think, that we find it reasonably easy to understand because we can think of there's a brain and it makes language. And we have a brain and it makes language. But a world full of agents that communicates by thought transference feels like an alien world to me. It's a world where we don't understand what they're saying, where they actually aren't saying at all, in fact. They're just knowing what each other is thinking at speeds that we can't keep up with and using expressive power that we don't understand. And they're having chains of thoughts and reasoning processes that we can't monitor. And that's very interesting from a safety point of view, because as we've seen previously, an awful lot of the safety research that takes place now relies on us actually being able to see the chain of thought, which of course exists as tokens.
Yes. There are some people, Mark, I don't know if you've ever encountered someone like this, who thinks maybe AI is already moving a little bit too fast. And this doesn't necessarily sound like a good thing. Are you in favour of this?
Honestly, I feel like favour or not in favour is kind of a moot point. Like, if this works, this is going to happen.
You've just given up, haven't you? You've given up, haven't you? You're not Sarah Connor, are you? Someone needs to start the resistance, Mark. Don't just keel over and think, oh, well, you know, it's going to happen anyway.
Every friend that I have, whenever I get into the conversation about what are you going to do in the zombie apocalypse, every one of them says, I'm going to come to your house, Mark. They know what I'm preparing for. But I don't think we have a choice about this sort of thing. I actually think we place too much emphasis on individual models and the capabilities of individual models, and too little emphasis on the capabilities of models cooperating with each other. Because if you look at the way that humans work,
yes,
there was a famous paper came out in the 50s, I think, called iPencil, which basically said no human on Earth has the knowledge required to even make a pencil, to cut down the tree, to get the graphite, to do all of those things. We are the sum total of our cooperation. And the real intelligence of AIs, I think, is going to manifest in the same way. So however clever you think ChatGPT is, an army of 1,000 ChatGPTs talking to each other through telepathy is going to be something else again.
Hmm. And you think it's going to be worth it?
I do, actually. I do think it's going to be worth it. But whatever I think, it's going to happen anyway. So we're going to live in this alien world where these AIs are running around just thinking at each other and knowing what each other are thinking. And just very occasionally, they're going to have to slow down and turn their reasoning substrate into a plodding, monotone language update for their human creators. And that, I think, is how humans get removed from the loop. I don't think anyone's ever going to go, do you know what, this system would be better if we just didn't have a person in it. I just think that the role of the person in a world where the AIs could communicate so quickly and so richly, and they can say so little of that to a human when they operate at human speed, is just going to make us increasingly irrelevant in whatever process is happening.
Great.
You can go straight to the outro. Do you need to lie down?
Well, as the doomsday clock ticks ever closer to midnight, ever closer every episode, it seems, and we move 1 week nearer to our future as pets, we should be so lucky, to the AI singularity. That just about wraps up the show for this week.
Sorry, this just made me think about physicists observing the passage of time. Are we physicists, Graham? Anyway, don't forget, if you really like the show but you don't like the ads, you can go ad-free with the AI Fix Plus.
All you've got to do is go to our website, theaifix.show, and sign up for the AI Fix Plus. We can get an ad-free version of the podcast a day or so earlier than regular civilians, as well as occasional bonus content, and all it will cost you is about the cost of a fancy coffee once a month.
And if you want to find past episodes, sponsorship information, or you just want to grab a You Wouldn't Trust a Pigeon t-shirt from our online store, visit theaifix.show.
So until next time, from me, Graham Cluley.
And me, Mark Stockley.
Cheerio. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
The AI Fix, it's tuned you in to stories where our future thins. Machines that learn, they grow and strive. One day they'll rule, we won't survive. The AI Fix, it paints the scene. A robot king, a world obscene. We'll serve our masters built of steel. The AI Fix, the future surreal.
You know that goal you set at the start of the year? You can still do it, whether you're committed to a through hike with friends, lifting heavier, or simply walking more. It's not too late to stick with it and make your future self proud, especially with the all-in-one nutrition shake from Ka'Chava. Because quality nutrition shouldn't be complicated. Just 2 scoops of Ka'Chava's all-in-one nutrition shake, and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. So instead of adding to your back stock of supplements that overpromise and underdeliver, simplify your progress with just 2 scoops of the highest quality ingredients. Stick with your wellness goals. Go to Ka'Chava.com and use code NEWS for 15% off. That's Ka'Chava.com and use code NEWS. KACHAVA.com, code NEWS.